This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This past weekend, a bipartisan task force called for U.S. policy toward Russia to change. A report presented by former vice presidential candidates of both political parties concludes that the goodwill that developed after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and especially after 9/11, is fading. What was once a promising democracy is clearly more authoritarian, and many worry about Russia's diplomatic tactics and maybe even its objectives on issues like Iran and Hamas. Given that, the report from the Council on Foreign Relations proposes a change from strategic partnership to a new policy of selective cooperation and selective opposition. Some in Congress say that doesn't go far enough. Senator John McCain and Congressman Tom Lantos are among those who recommend that Russia be removed as a member of the G8. Others say that would be unnecessarily provocative and that the U.S. and its allies need Russian cooperation on important issues like Iran, North Korea, and terrorism. Later in the program, NPR's political junkie joins us to take your calls on warrantless wiretaps, port security, and yesterday's primary elections in Texas. But first, relations between Moscow and Washington. If you have questions about deepening divisions and common interests, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Stephen Sestanovich joins us now. He's a specialist on Russia. He was the project director on the task force sponsored by the Council on Foreign Relations. He's with us today from the studios of the School of Journalism at Columbia University in New York. And thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Pleasure.
First, let's clarify the changes in Russia, primarily the internal changes. What does this mean for relations with the United States?
Well, the group's conclusion was that the Russian-American relationship is going in the wrong direction, but it finds one important source of that in Russia's internal direction, and that is the rollback of Russian democratic institutions under President Putin over the past 5 years. And its conclusion is that as a consequence of the direction that President Putin has set externally and internally, the relationship isn't living up to its potential. That's not to say it's completely adversarial. We actually find a lot of areas where the two sides need to cooperate, but the group's conclusion is it'll be easier to cooperate if Russia's drawn back into the sort of democratic political mainstream.
Mm-hmm. And but is right now Russia is the chairman of the G8 this year. They're preparing to hold the summit in St. Petersburg. And, of course, the United States is committed to go, but some are saying that maybe it shouldn't.
Yeah, that's not the consensus of the task force, but they the report notes that it was a closer call than we expected, and that if that decision were being made today, it was actually made in 2002,
mm-hmm.
It probably wouldn't be made the same way, that the example that Russia has set over the past year and a half, remember gross manipulation and interference in the Ukrainian presidential election and then cutting off Ukraine's gas and that to the rest of Europe too, those examples would make it hard to decide today. But the group's view was maybe we can do better by keeping them in the group, not because we need so much from them, although we want to work with them, but because it may be easier to change their policies in areas where we find it difficult to work together by having them inside the tent.
Some
for
would
now.
For now. Okay. Some would say that from their point of view, they see a lot of Western and particularly American interference in things like the Ukraine and the current situation in Belarus.
Oh, I don't think anyone could really argue that the American interference in Ukraine was on the scale of the Russian. The American policy over a couple of years before the election was to call for free and fair election. The Russian policy was to prevent one. But you put your finger on an important point, which is that a convincing message about where Russia's headed can't just be an American one. And the group is pretty strong on the importance of having a unified American and European view. And, in fact, pretty unified about the need for the United States and its allies in Europe to sit down and try to develop a more concerted approach to Russia. which we haven't really been doing over the past several years.
And what you're advocating, selective cooperation, selective opposition, in other words, case-by-case basis, but no more strategic partnership.
Well, the group's conclusion was that that's just kind of unrealistic right now, that partnership presumes a little more of a common outlook, and that you don't see that in the way Russia and America have interacted in the past several years. I mean, they're kind of dramatic cases of this. One would be the cutoff of gas to Ukraine. Another would be the rather bizarre Russian effort to try to deny NATO access to bases in Central Asia that support our operations in Afghanistan. There are cases where we've been cooperating, and we don't minimize these. And Iran is the most pressing and important of those right now. But that's a kind of cooperation that we can't really say comes out of partnership.
Let's get another voice in on this conversation now. Congressman Tom Lantos of California joins us. He's the ranking Democrat on the House International Relations Committee, and he's with us today from his office on Capitol Hill. And Congressman, very good of you to take the time to speak with us.
My pleasure.
You're among those who think maybe this task force report's recommendations don't go quite far enough. You've called for Russia to be removed as a member of the G8.
Well, Senator McCain and I have had a growing feeling that since the G8 developed as an organization of major industrial countries which are political democracies, by no definition does Russia qualify. Russia's gross domestic product is equivalent to that of Belgium. They are now getting money from the sale of petroleum, but their domestic economy hasn't really grown adequately to be called a major industrial democracy. And under Putin, fledgling democracy has been moving in reverse. There is no independent parliament. There is no independent judiciary. Regional governors who used to be elected are now appointed by Putin. And he has taken over the media. So by no stretch of the imagination is this country, unfortunately, a democracy.
Yet their membership in the G8 was an important symbolic nod to Moscow's importance and growing importance in the world. To kick them out would certainly be seen as an insult.
Well, let me first spend a moment about their admittance into the G8. Originally, the G7 invited Mr. Yeltsin to attend as a guest. And since the direction was positive in terms of democratic societies, at one point he was invited to join as a member. Now, no one is talking about kicking them out. We are talking about the possibility of suspending their membership, and we are talking about the possibility of moving the venue of this upcoming summit to a capital in one of the other seven, which are unquestionably democratic societies. But Steve Sistanovich, a few minutes ago, gave away the game, because very honestly he stated that if the decision would be made today, the other seven would not agree to St. Petersburg. And I think that's basically Senator McCain's and my position. We are realists, and the chances are that the summit will take place in St. Petersburg, and the chances are they will not be suspended. But you will be interested to learn that a significant number of highly respected parliamentarians from the other seven have contacted me, expressing a great deal of interest in the possibility of expressing jointly our disapproval of trends in Russia.
Well, let's get some listeners in on this conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. We'll begin with Josh, and Josh is calling from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yes, hi. As a political scientist, specializing in Russian foreign affairs. I have great respect for Mr. Stanovich, but I'm worried that Mr. Putin, this would just further exacerbate the problem, as he's not really the idealist that Yeltsin was, and that he's more of a pragmatic strategist, especially with their control over oil and Central Asia.
Might this not make the problem worse? As Stephen Sestanovich, we'll go to you first and then to Congressman Lantos.
Well, you know, I think the record is that when the Russians see that they're isolated in forums, including the United States and Europe, they respond better than if we pretend that there isn't any difficulty. And I think one of the task force that I've been part of has felt that what we need are forums in which we can make clear when Russia is isolated and why, and what needs to be done. When when the Russians cut off the gas to Ukraine, the European government started freaking out, and it became clear that the Russians had miscalculated, and they had to change course right away. I think it's possible to get positive results from Russian policy with that kind of clear expression of our view. I think you've seen the same thing on Iran. Russian policy's gotten better on Iran as the United States and Europe have become united and conveyed their policy to Russia. If I could add one more point. Tom Lantos says he's a realist, and I think he'd probably agree. He said that he thinks this G8 meeting is going to happen in this summer. What our group is proposing is that as it happens, or in advance of it happening, that the G7 reconstitute itself, that they meet separately to try to prepare, in an informal way, to prepare the agenda so that there is a clearly communicated view of the United States and its allies about where we're off track with the Russians.
We're going to have to take a short break, so Congressman Lantos, if you could stay with us, we'll get your response afterwards. I'm Neil Conan. We're going to take a short break. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the deepening chill between Moscow and Washington. Our guests are Stephen Sestanovich of the Council on Foreign Relations and Congressman Tom Lantos, the ranking Democrat on the House International Relations Committee. Also with us on the line is Josh, calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. And his question to you, Congressman Lantos, is if driven into isolation, wouldn't that exacerbate the problem?
Well, nobody's talking about isolating Russia. What we are talking about is taking steps that hopefully will modify their behavior. And let's look at their recent behavior. They are not playing a very helpful role with respect to Iran. I went to Moscow some time back to meet with the Minister of Energy, attempting to persuade him to stop developing nuclear capabilities in Iran. Former Secretary Colin Powell and our current Secretary of State, Condi Rice, attempted the same thing, as did the President. We all struck out. The Russians are hell-bent by building Bushehr and other similar facilities.
A nuclear power plant in Iran. Go ahead.
Nuclear power plant in Iran. They have been totally unfriendly in attempting to develop a united front. Yesterday, with a few colleagues, I was invited into the cabinet room with the President and Dr. Rice to discuss some of these issues, and the Russian foreign minister was leaving as we came in. We still don't know, because there have been conflicting statements over the last 24 hours, whether they will agree with us on demanding UN sanctions on Iran, or whether they will want to carve out a special role attempting to pacify the Iranian president, who cannot be pacified. This is a reckless, ideologically and religiously driven regime, which needs to be confronted by a united civilized world, and the Russians are most reluctant to play the only proper role that they should be playing. Mm. They're breaking the united front with respect to Hamas. Inviting Hamas to Moscow was in direct opposition to their agreement that Hamas will be insulated. They're shutting off natural gas supplies to Europe during the coldest week in this past winter's history of Europe is an indication that they're flexing their muscle and are ready to use the petroleum weapon. They are not being helpful. Their attempt to undermine free elections in Ukraine, their attempt to undermine free elections in Georgia, are all indications that under Putin, let us not forget it, he's a KGB colonel, and once a KGB colonel, he doesn't become Mother Teresa. Their approach to the world is fundamentally different from ours. Mm.
Josh, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And let's get another caller on the line, and this is Chassie. Chassie's calling from Gloucester, Ohio.
It really seems that Russia has been making far more efforts at diplomacy and negotiations, you know, to slow down the endless efforts of the Bush administration in Israel for UN security measures against Iran. And I heard Wesley Clark on Stephanopoulos' program this Sunday, and he repeated over and over and over again that it is critical for the U.S. to engage in talks with Iran and not to back them in the corner. I wish you'd have Wesley Clark on your program. And I wanted to ask Representative Lantos, where is this verifiable evidence in regard to the repeated claims about Iran's alleged nuclear developments? I wish somebody would do a program on where the verifiable evidence.
Well, let me try to answer you. The French foreign minister stated without any qualification a few days ago that there is absolutely no question about the nature of the Iranian nuclear program, that this is a military program. Now, this is not the United States. This is not anybody else. It is the French foreign minister. And the French have been in the forefront of trying to reach out to Iran for many, many years
and I have
significant commercial interests there.
I appreciate the response, but let's focus on Russia as opposed to Iran. We'll get to Iran another day. In terms of Russia, I think Chassie's point is that she and others believe that engagement with Hamas and with Iran is a good thing over the long run.
Well, let's talk about engagement. Under President Clinton, we have reached out. Secretary Albright made a variety of very significant gestures to try to reestablish relations. I personally have been attempting for years to get a visa to Iran. Kofi Annan, my good friend, intervened on my behalf with the Iranian government to allow me to visit that country. We are anxious and eager to solve all issues diplomatically. And that certainly is the case with respect to our relations with Russia. Mm-hmm. But to pretend that Russia is a democratic society in the year 2006 is an absurdity.
Chassie, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
And Congressman Lantos, we know you're busy. I wanted to thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Congressman Tom Lantos, the ranking Democrat on the House International Relations Committee, joining us from his office on Capitol Hill. And for another point of view, let's introduce Nicholas Gvozdev, editor of the foreign policy magazine National Interest, also a specialist on Russia. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. Nice to have you on the program as well.
Thank you.
I understand you have problems with the CFR report and its proposals.
Go as far as say to say that it's problems. It's a question of how we approach what is a thorny issue, and we're seeing this not only with Russia but with a number of countries. We could point to Pakistan and others, countries that are important to the U.S., but where we don't necessarily like some of the directions of their domestic policy, and we're concerned that our foreign policy interests don't always overlap. So the question is how do we move ahead to try to harmonize our interests, where they can be harmonized, and how we can minimize the disruption that occurs when we have divergences. And that's why, in looking at the report, one of the things I found most interesting was the comments that were appended at the end by several people, by Walter Slocum, by Bob Blackwell, by Dov Zakheim, really making the case that on this question of the U.S.-Russia relationship, we really have to focus on those areas where we can cooperate. And while we can be concerned about domestic developments, we have to put those into the proper priorities of how they impact the U.S.-Russia relationship, particularly when you look at the case, and this is something I think we have to deal with. You have a Russia today where the economy has recovered. You have a rising middle class. You have a regime that we find objectionable, and the congressman, I think, outlines a number of those objections from the U.S. side, but at the same time, which is enjoying pretty broad-based support over there, particularly among this rising middle class. It's not likely to be easily dislodged just by a push or two emanating from the United States. And so the question is what's the best way to engage that regime, to engage that government to move ahead? And I think that we might be running into some difficulties if we think we can easily engage and isolate as if we can simply turn it on and off at our own timing. And I think that there is going to have to be some accommodation if we think that Russia's cooperation on things like Iran, the peace process in the Middle East, counterterrorism and such is important. If you don't think that Russia really matters in those areas, then I think you can move ahead with greater pressure on Russia if you don't expect a certain degree of cooperation in return.
Well, Stephen Sustanovich, your report certainly concludes that Russian cooperation is vital on any number of issues, including Iran, the Middle East, North Korea,
right,
and terrorism.
Right. You know, the group that Senator Edwards and Secretary Kemp chaired debated these issues many, many times, and some people in the group didn't agree, as Nick Vostev has pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
But the consensus was that the choice that he's described is a false one, that you don't have to buy Russian support on issues that involve our national interests and their national interests. On an issue like Iran, if we're going to be able to cooperate, it's got to be because each government sees it as consistent with its national security to work together. And if it doesn't, you won't have any lasting cooperation. Meanwhile, it needs to be possible, and in the view of our group, is possible, to be pretty emphatic and direct about those areas where we don't agree. And I think the issue of Iran is a pretty good one. In the past year, as I mentioned, I think Russian policy has actually become more constructive. At the same time that they've heard more criticism, even from President Bush and Secretary Rice, about their internal developments. So we don't think this is a trade-off that needs to be made. I think it's actually kind of unsophisticated to say that, you know, the Russians will only play ball with us if we pretend they're a democracy.
I don't think anyone is advocating that. I think that you can have a very clear communication and sharing of where you think that there are divergences. But I think that, as you summed it up right there, on Iran and on everything else, if the national interests are in sync, then you will have good cooperation. I think one of the things we have to avoid against is the belief that somehow Russia will accommodate the United States on something that is of prime interest to us if we don't also understand what their interests are. And I think that some of these discussions that we've, as I was listening in, we have very clear differences about the trajectory of the Eurasian space. It's not a question of having to sell out or to have quid pro quos, but I do think that we do need to have a better understanding of the interests of both sides and not to automatically assume the worst-case assumptions about the other's motives. This was very clear on my most recent trip to Russia. One of the things that's of great concern to me now is the extent to which both sides are primed to assume that the other's motives are negative and nefarious, and that that certainly undermines the basis for meaningful cooperation, not only at the top level, but more importantly, where the relationship needs to grow and strengthen, which is between the business communities, at the mid-levels of the bureaucracies, between the legislatures and ultimately between the societies themselves.
And how do you think the Russians would respond if there were, as the Council on Foreign Relations report suggests, a preliminary G7 meeting elsewhere that would exclude the Russians?
I think a lot of that depends on the extent to which they would feel, and obviously I'm not privy to some of the inner thinking of the Kremlin circle on this, but I think the extent to which preliminary meetings were meant to produce positions that then you come to St. Petersburg and it's a take-it-or-leave-it proposition, which was some of the difficulties I think we had in the Russia-NATO approach of the 1990s, where there was this sense of Russia not being able to influence or have a equal seat at the table on these discussions. I think if it's a question of we're meeting in advance to present you with final conclusions we expect you to sign or not to sign, that might be difficult. I think then that they might find some degree of objection to that. On the other hand, I think that they feel, and this was something I heard, that countries are free to meet with each other, work out their positions, and they certainly are continuing with their own discussions with various members of the G8, as well as with other powers not in the G8 system.
We're talking about relations between the United States and Russia with Stephen Stevanovich of the Council on Foreign Relations and Nicholas Gvozdev, editor of the National Interest, which is a Russia specialist himself. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. This is Anatol. Anatol's calling us from Newton, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, a question to your panelists. The United States is dealing very nicely with the openly dictatorial China and the openly dictatorial Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Jordan. And yet we demand that Russia would be more democratic than it is from Russia in order to deal with it. Why such a difference, and don't you think it's hypocritical of the United States to do that?
To some degree, the report was presented in the context of the G8, and none of those countries you mentioned are members of the G8, but Stephen Stefanovich, double standard?
I'll give you the answer that I hear from Russians when I say, should the United States just treat Russia the way it treats Saudi Arabia and China and Pakistan, Nick Gvozdev mentioned, or Zimbabwe? And they said, don't insult us by treating us as a non-European country. There's a powerful motive in Russia to be part of Europe. And I don't hear a lot of Russians saying, just treat us the way you treat Saudi Arabia. There's a lot of national pride involved in being a modern European country. And what the Kemp Edwards Task Force has said is Russia's actually becoming less modern in its politics.
That's not my point. I'm saying that if we want to be true, if we want the world to cooperate with us, whether it's a G7 or other organization country, we have to be true to the world to show all the countries that we do mean to establish democracy. If we do that, how come we cooperate with the monarchies? Of Saudi Arabia. It's a principle.
Well, I think it's an interesting point, particularly now in the context of President Bush's foreign policy, in which he has said, we've too long said that Arab monarchies, for example, are an exception to our interest in promoting democracy. And, over the past several years, there's been much more momentum behind an American policy to try to open up some of those societies in the conviction that they'll be better partners for the United States.
And Nicholas,
now the question is Russia supposed to be an exception to that policy?
Can we get a quick comment from Nicholas Gvozdev before we have to leave?
Yes. I mean, I think that this illustrates that there is problems when you sort of put an ideological position out as your foreign policy and then you suddenly discover that there are exceptions. I think part of the issue is we need to be true in identifying what the positives and negatives are. I think that one of the things that we've discovered in the Middle East is and elsewhere is that sometimes different values of ours, as well as some of our interests, can be in contradiction, and we have to find a way to prioritize what matters and moves the process forward. This also means being more truthful about Russia. I'm a bit concerned when I hear the 1990s described as some golden age of Russian democracy. I mean, the Yeltsin administration, particularly by the second term, was turning into a pretty disorganized kleptocracy.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Nicholas Gvozdev, thank you very much for being with us. He edits the National Interest and is a Russia specialist. Also, our thanks to Stephen Sestanovich of the Council on Foreign Relations. And when we come back from a break, our political junkie joins us with lots of news. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.